Hey friends, I'm Naomi, and I'm glad to have you here listening to A Creative Purpose. This space is here to encourage and support creatives bring their ideas to life. I believe we each have our own brilliance to share with the world, and when we lean into that, we have opportunities to live an adventurous life. I have some great conversations with other creatives where they share their journey and the lessons learned along the way. I'll also share my story and what I've learned and am learning on this beautiful, sometimes difficult road to living a life I love. Welcome back. Today I have Bryson with me and he's calling in from Ohio. Welcome, Bryson.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to see what we can get into.
Yeah, definitely. Can you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do?
For sure. My name is Bryson Tarbett. Like you said, I am here in Columbus, Ohio. I'm a full-time elementary music teacher. And on top of that, I also run That Music Teacher, which is an online business focusing on giving elementary music teachers the professional development that they need to make their classrooms accessible and, you know, make sure that everyone truly can be a part of a music classroom while also protecting their sanity and their spirit, because we all know that teaching can be a little bit rough. And that's kind of what I do in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm excited for this conversation because I am a PE teacher by trade many, many years. And so I work closely with other music teachers. And especially when I was in Denver, one PE teacher, one music teacher. So you collaborate a lot. So what has that looked like for you in your career? Or let me back up. How did you get into teaching and why do you stay in it?
Oh, that's quite the question. So my parents were both teachers. My grandpa was a teacher. There's a lot of teachers in my family. So that kind of seemed like the natural progression. When I started going through school, music kind of became my thing. You know, I was in band, I was in orchestra, I was in choir. I did all the things music. And it was just kind of this natural progression. I battled a lot on if I wanted to go into the performance field or in education. We ended up in education. And I actually, what's funny is certification in Ohio is K through 12, everything basically. So I always thought that I wanted to be a choir teacher at the high school level. And then I started working with Arian undergrad and I go, no, this isn't for me. But thankfully, right after I had that soul crushing moment of realizing high school was not something I wanted to do, I observed an elementary music classroom and just being able to see the joy and the type of high quality music making that's happening through so much joy really changed my life and completely changed my trajectory as an educator. I've been teaching here. This is my fifth year of teaching. I had a gap year working in the special education realm after undergrad. But my favorite part of teaching is being able to really educate the holistic child. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the American education system is perfect and not broken at all. There's a lot of, you know, heavy stakes testing and things like that. But what I love about the music classroom is that truly, when you set it up right, every student can be successful and every student can find what music means to them. Because when it comes down to it, I would love to see all of my students become professional musicians or music teachers, but that's just not going to happen. I want them to move forward as adults that understand the value of music and the value of the arts and become patrons of the arts as they become adults and move forward in their lives.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so awesome to hear, because I think that's so important to remember that we are teaching the whole child and not everybody's going to love playing an instrument, but they can still appreciate art, like you said. And so I feel the same way in the physical education classroom. Not everybody likes sport, but, you know, maybe I can help them enjoy it just a little bit more for the health of it. And so as you have gotten into, you know, thinking high school, ending up in elementary school, what has that looked like as you've, you know, been in it 5 years and now are trying to help other educators with that professional development? What sparked that interest or idea?
So like I said, the certification in Ohio, and honestly, a lot here in the United States, is kindergarten through 12th grade, band, general music, choir, orchestra, it's all that stuff. And when you try to fit all of that into a four-year degree, things are going to get left off. And unfortunately, it tends to be the elementary level, which is a little irking to me because the majority of the jobs are at the elementary level. So we have so many educators that are leaving undergrad that are licensed to teach elementary music that don't know what they're doing. I mean, me and my undergrad, you know, I took multiple classes on how to teach instruments for a band, you know, if I were to be a band director, but I took one class my entire undergrad about teaching elementary music. And that's my job. So there, I've had a lot of conversations with other teachers that are like, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I was told to, you know, make a curriculum that sequences, but I don't know what to teach. I don't know what they need to know. And that's kind of what sparked that music teacher. Quite honestly, it started as a very big accident and it spiraled out of control in an amazing way over the past few years. But it was just realizing that there is such a need for professional development at that content specific professional development, because even if you can find music PD or music conferences, the elementary level usually gets, if they're concluded at all, maybe there's a couple things in there and maybe they may or not be super high quality. And again, the reality is the majority of the jobs out there are elementary music, and a little bit of the responsibility is, you know, hey, if we have kids that'll never do band, choir, orchestra, we might be the only formal music education they get. So we should probably know what we're doing. And that's kind of what sparked this and what kind of moved things forward and why I keep doing this day in and day out.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because teaching is a full legit gig in its own. And then going above and beyond doing stuff outside the classroom. How do you manage your time with that, with having this creative idea that you're bringing to life, but then the realities of life and the energy that you do have?
That's a really good question. I'll be honest. I mean, I'm definitely an Enneagram 3. If everything I touch turns into something way more complicated than it needs to be. But it's, I guess the answer is kind of realizing why I'm doing it and why it's important, and realizing that, hey, what I'm building now is helping people, but also like the goal for my business is that, you know, when I plan to adopt in the next couple of years, I want to be able to take a year off of teaching and still have money. So that's the thing that I'm like, all right, I'm working a lot right now, but I know that this is kind of building the foundation for what I'm going to need for what I want my life to be. And beyond that, I guess some sort of biohacking my ADHD brain. I've figured out a couple different ways to force a hyper focus, which can be really helpful certain times, to get some bigger projects done, and just kind of really dive in, close myself off to the world, and then come out with a brand new project, can be a really good way to use my time. But honestly, I use a lot of combination of, like, I have project management software, I use a physical journal to just keep my brain organized. And when it comes down to it, if it's not in my Google calendar, it's not going to happen. I have a Google town. I have like 7 Google calendars between everything. And if it's not there, I'm really like, I will not come. I will not be there. I will not do the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've relied heavily on Google calendars now. And I'm like, I don't know what tomorrow holds because I don't put it in my brain anymore. It has to be on the calendar for me to remember. So yeah, when you have so many different projects, tabs open in the brain, it's nice to be organized that way. So that's awesome. When you started this, how are you running your business and what have you learned on that journey of getting the word out, getting your products out, all that stuff?
I want to take you back a little bit before to kind of answer that question. When I say it kind of started by accident, I mean 100%. That music teacher started out as an Instagram account because my gap year between undergrad and my first year of teaching, I was in the special ed world and I missed the music classroom. So I created an Instagram account just so I could follow a bunch of music teachers without having my personal Instagram feed inundated by classrooms. And then it just kind of spiraled, you know, a few months later, my first year of teaching, I literally accidentally went live on Instagram and I'm like, all right, I guess I'm here. Let me talk about my week. And that ended up spiraling into a weekly live series, which ended up spiraling into my podcast. And it's just spiraled and spiraled. And what I love about my journey as a business owner is it's, I've taken so much of what I've learned as a teacher and brought it into that. But at the same time, it's flipped the other way around. I just had my evaluation this year with my principal, and she said, hey, there's this really, this section on the evaluation rubric that is really hard to get like really high scores on. But because of all the other stuff you do outside of teaching, leading that professional development, things like that, you're able to get it. And that was like, whoa, this thing that I'm doing outside of school that for years I didn't want my school to know about, because I'm like, well, what if they say no? You know, they're like, hey, this is helping you become a better educator. And, you know, now the work I've done with here, you know, I'm the union vice president for my district. And I really, truly believe that the work that I've been doing with that music teacher has helped me grow as a leader that as well. And it's just, it's interesting to see me grow as a person rather than me growing in specific boxes, you know, as an educator, as a business owner. And it's something that every once in a while I look back and I go, whoa, what just happened? But I'm really glad that it happened the way it did, because I truly believe that whatever this journey is going to bring me to wherever I'm meant to be, whether that be in the classroom, whether that be out of the classroom, but regardless, the skills are here to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. And that's cool that your principal recognized that, you know, and because that is kind of scary for people that have a day job. Like, will I get in trouble for this? Will they support it and all that stuff? And like, I consider myself a multi-passionate. You sound like you are. And so having just one thing to focus on, sometimes that's not enough, right? Like we have a creative mind and we have ideas and we want to help people with that. So what are some other things along your journey that maybe you've tried or things that you want to do in the future that you see you want to try as well? Do you have any other big visions?
So I actually just, you know, kind of dove into one of my big visions this past summer. I've wanted since the beginning of that music teacher to host a conference, because again, I knew that there wasn't enough PD for elementary music. And, you know, I wanted to do it. And this summer I'm like, you know what, I'm going to do it. So I hosted the Elementary Music Summit, which was a free online summit for elementary music teachers specifically receiving that elementary music professional development. The way that I did it, I wouldn't recommend. I had the summit the week after I completed 10 graduate credits in 3 weeks. And I also got COVID during those 3 weeks. So probably not the best plan, but you know, it turned out really well. Like my goal for the first summit was, if we have 200 people show up and get this PD, that would make my heart super full, because think about how that outward mobility and how many students that impacts. We had over 2,200 people show up to the summit, and it blew my mind. Like I knew that there was such a need, but I didn't quite realize just how much it was needed. And that's kind of that right there changed a lot of the trajectory of my business, because I realized, oh, this is something that really is here. This is something that needs to be done. And that's kind of, you know, I'm really glad that I did it, because again, thinking about how many students that I've been able to impact and my speakers were able to impact. And that's kind of just really, that's the teacher heart of me being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And like learning all the back end stuff of running an online thing, like how did you find that experience?
I love to tinker. I've always been the one to make something work, whether or not it's the best way, whether or not it'll ever work again. I remember there's a story. My parents had this scanner, like a document scanner that was never worked for like 5-10 years. And I wanted to fix it. And I was probably 10 years old or something. And I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. It took me 10 years, but eventually I got it to work. The first thing I did as a, you know, as a young kid was to scan my face, and make that my Facebook profile picture, because that's the person I am. But I've always been one to tinker and make things work. But I've also been one to just take in information. I listen to business podcasts constantly. I've invested money in, you know, Summit in a Box with Krista Miller to help me do the summit. I've done Digital Course Academy and Momentum with Amy Porterfield. And I like having that support. And I know that, you know, hey, if I can't really figure something out, I have the support to help me, but I like to just dive in and see what I can do.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Yeah. It's a lot to take on something new. So it's awesome that you like to tinker. It's fun.
For sure. It's one of my dirty habits.
Yeah, that's cool. So as like a music educator, arts educator, what are you seeing in the schools today? Like I know in the districts I've been in, funding has always been a thing or not having stuff. So what does that look like where in your area and how are you trying to combat it?
There's definitely, here in Ohio, especially the school funding formula is not great. And so there's definitely a lot of things that make districts inequitable. In my district, whether or not I feel like I have everything I need, I feel like I at least can get listened to for the most part. And like maybe set some longer things into process. But what really kind of gets me is the amount or the amount of students that each arts educator serves. Just here in Columbus, Ohio, this past year, we had the biggest school district in the state, Columbus City Schools, went on strike. And one of their things that they were striking for was a full-time art, music, and PE teacher in each building. Because we have these giant buildings. I mean, this is a huge district. And we have teachers that are serving multiple buildings. I mean, me personally, I serve two buildings, but also much different district size. And that's one of those things where I really, you know, how can we be set up to set our students up for success if we're juggling thousands of students? One of my grad school friends, she taught in Atlanta, and she literally had over 1,000 students. And I get it to a certain degree, but at the same time, how are we really expected to differentiate our lessons when we have 1,000 different people? I mean, how are we let alone learning their names, let alone learning their learning needs and their triggers and their sensory needs? And that's one of those things where I'm blessed where I'm at, where I feel like my student load is small enough, even though it's very large, it's small enough that I can get to know people over the few years. But my first year of teaching, I was just winging it with differentiation. I was just winging it with, you know, with names, because there's so many. And if I guess that's my big thing, you know, I'm less worried about all the stuff, all of the instruments, all the trips and things. And I'm more worried about how we can fund schools so that teachers in general, because it's not just a music teacher or an arts teacher problem where we're understaffed, but how can we really make sure that we have enough personnel in our schools that we can give our students the education that they deserve?
Yeah, amen to that. It's always mind-boggling how we do education these days. And I'm sure we could get into a whole thing.
We could get on a very big soapbox.
Rewrite it all and stuff like that. And now being in international, you know, schools, it's, you know, it still can be like that, but it can also be different. And, you know, so just as a whole, what are we looking for in an education system? And so, yeah, that's a lot of students to manage 1,000. My goodness. So, yeah. What else have you learned on your journey of becoming a music teacher, business owner? Anything else that you'd like to share with anybody?
I guess that the biggest thing that I kind of accidentally learned through this journey was kind of unpacking my own neurodiversity a little bit. You know, I was diagnosed with ADHD as a young kid. And in college, I thought I grew out of it. Plot twist, you don't. You don't. You just learn really unhealthy ways of dealing with it. So I've had to relearn and unlearn a lot of my coping mechanisms that also kind of affected my mental health. You know, I battled with anxiety and depression a lot. And, you know, surprise, surprise, when you have no executive functioning, your life feels a lot more hectic. So learning to be able to take control of my ADHD and, you know, start using planners and things like that so that I don't have all these ideas in my brain, that has been a big change. Throughout this process, I've realized I've been diagnosed with sensory processing disorder, which as a music teacher can be really complicated here and there. So finding those ways that I can make my classroom more accessible to me has been really great. But also what I like is it's also making, it's being so cognizant has made me aware of how I can make my classrooms more sensory accessible to all of my students. So that's been a really good, a good way to kind of build that empathy. Like I have some students that they're just sensory overloaded, and I love being able to, you know, you can tell they struggle because they're moving all day. And, you know, I have one kid that he was struggling ahead of class. I kind of talked to him after class. This is a kindergartner. And I go, do you feel like sometimes you're getting in trouble for things that you can't control? And the look on his face was like, I just called him out. Like, he was like, wow, yeah, you're right. And I'm like, yeah, I really felt the same way when I was your age. You know, I felt like, you know, I just needed to move and nobody really, you know, I kept getting in trouble because, you know, so we were able to implement some sensory things and some fidgets. And whether or not this kid ends up being a professional musician, whether he even likes being in music in the future, I am firmly confident that he will remember the relationship that I built because I took the moment to know him and to validate the way that he's experiencing the world. And that's something that I'm very passionate about. And I think teachers need to do more of, but at the same time, I'm fully aware of the system working against us so that we don't have the time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that too. And yeah, you just think of all the kids, right, that are growing up today that can be helped so much by us as adults, like learning more about ourselves and how we function so that we can relate to them and share with them. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I can understand. So let's work together to figure out a better way to do this so that we can both be in this classroom and enjoy this learning experience. And I like that you provided that for him, because teaching is about relationships. And sometimes when it's just too much of other things going on, we lose that, or potentially can lose that. And that's so frustrating.
For sure. One of the biggest flips that I've had in my quote unquote classroom management is if there's a student that I can tell this is not a decision, their behavior, they're not deciding to do this. They can't help it. Going up and instead of saying, I need you to stop, or I need you to sit down, say, how can I help you? How can I help you be in your own space? That is a huge help. And oftentimes they say, I don't know. But the more you do that, the more I say, well, can I go get a drink? And then letting them get an escape, they're able to be just shifting that. Even if that doesn't solve the problem, you're not harming the relationship. So I would rather not harm the relationship and not solve the problem than not solve the problem and not harm the relationship. And that's been the biggest shift in my classroom.
Yeah. Well, and it's giving them ownership. It's sure. giving them an opportunity to think like, what is happening in my body? What would be supportive? Where maybe in the past it's always been like top down, this is what you do, but it's like taking ownership of your own learning and understanding of yourself. So that's awesome that you do that. Is your school pretty supportive, like as a whole, or your district, of providing opportunities for kids to do things differently?
I would say we really try to. I think it is a priority. I think where it gets stuck is where many districts get stuck in that we are understaffed because, I mean, we're already in a teacher shortage. You know, even if there aren't open positions, you know, unfilled positions, it comes down to the funding. You know, we need to make sure that we're being fiscally responsible. And if the school funding formula doesn't allow us to hire the mental health support and the intervention specialists that we need, you know, a lot of times teachers are trying to keep their head above water. And that makes it really hard to do these, I don't want to say extra things because they're not, but to do these more deeper level things to really get to the core of how we can help our students. But what I've noticed and what I love seeing in, you know, with teachers that I work with, teachers that I've had conversations with, is the want is there. The passion is there. Sometimes it's the system that gets in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So you said you're a union rep, right?
I started as a union rep for a few years and then ended up as the vice president somehow.
Okay. How has that experience been for you?
It's been, well, let me say, I mean, my first year as a union rep was when COVID hit. Things got complicated quick. This past year, we worked without a contract for many months. We were very close to striking. Thank goodness we didn't have to. And it's been a journey. It's something I'm really passionate about because, again, I see the system. I see the flaws in the system. And I know that sometimes it's not the administrators trying or the district trying to be the bad guys. Sometimes they have to be, or sometimes, you know, they're not set up for success with the way they're funded or things like that. But I really think it's important for educators to fight for what they know is best for kids. And the reality is that teacher working conditions are student learning conditions. And that's something that, you can't overstate that. And the reality is, you know, you might see rhetoric about teachers, you know, getting the summers off and they get paid this much. Wow. And they want more. But the reality is one, we don't get paid. We don't get the summers off. We work all year and then we spread out our pay. But another thing is that, you know, when teachers work multiple jobs and when they have to work multiple jobs just in order to make ends meet, how are they supposed to get their best in the classroom? How are they supposed to show up, you know, and give what they want to give in the classroom when in order to pay their mortgage, they have to work 12-hour days at a second job? And that's where I think I'm not going to sit here and say unions are perfect all the time, but I am here to say that unions can be very helpful in protecting teachers and protecting educational support professionals so that we can do our job and protect the students and advocate for our students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I can't remember 1 year in my teaching career that I haven't had something else going on. another job or source of income. So
it's a very real thing. I mean, when we were starting the negotiations process for our new contract, you know, we asked teachers if you work a second job, and the number was incredibly high. And that echoes a lot of what, and that's not because we're necessarily a low paying district or anything like that. It's the reality of what teaching is sometimes.
Yeah. What do you think people not in education can do to help education?
Well, the biggest thing is support the teachers and don't listen to the rhetoric that teachers are trying to, you know, indoctrinate your children and do this, that, and the other thing. Is because when the reality is we don't have the time with all the other mandates that we have to do, that we're just trying to, especially after COVID, and we're really trying to deal with a lot of the behaviors that have started to happen more because of all that COVID isolation, things like that, but also just the academics, things like that. Is just support your teachers. If they send you a message and say, hey, Johnny had a really rough day, talk to Johnny. Don't blame it on the teachers. You know, if you have a concern and you need to advocate for your kid, please do so. But let's at least assume positive intent before we start going and, you know, knocking down the door of the principal's office. And that's kind of the biggest thing, is try to make your teacher, especially if you're a parent, try to make the teacher a team. Because the reality is we see your kids a lot. We are with your kids a lot of the day. We are not the parents. We don't want to be the parents, but we are spending a lot of time with them and we are shaping them in a very specific way because that's what we've been mandated to do as teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That's good. I like that. Assume the positive intent, because I think we all are. I mean, yes, there's always something, but for the most part, teachers, we don't get into this for the money. You know, we get into it for the care of kids and the education of kids and, you know, the next generation. And so I like that she said that, because I agree. How can we work together?
I think that's just a good way to look through life. I mean, that's one of the rules in my Facebook group. That's one of, like, just even when my classroom, like, hey, he hit me. Did he hit you? Or was he just out of control and you got caught in the crossfire? Like, that's still a problem, but, like, it's a different problem. And I think that when you assume positive intent, it changes your outlook on things and it makes your life less grumpy. And there's enough stuff that isn't going to be positive. So don't make things negative when they aren't already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And recently I joined this Facebook group on teachers, and it's just heartbreaking how many teachers are at their mental edge. You know, they're trying to show up every day, but it's just gotten to the point where it's just too much.
Yeah.
You know, and where's the care for them so that they can continue to care for the kids? And so, I worry about that whole ripple effect. Because sure. if we don't have teachers in the classroom, then we don't have kids learning and that whole thing. So,
well, and that's the thing is, you know, we were on the beginning of a teacher shortage before COVID, and then teachers were put through the ringer. And I'm not saying we were the only ones put through the ringer during COVID. That was obviously a industry, you know, multi-industry struggle. But the reality is this teacher shortage is getting worse and worse. And we have mm-hmm. teachers that are leaving and teachers that, I mean, the amount of, you know, new people that I see coaching teachers to find jobs outside of teaching, which is awesome. I love that. But there's a lot more than there were, you know, a few years ago. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of scary because like you mm-hmm. said, there's that ripple effect. You get teachers leave. So the teachers that don't leave are getting more overworked so that they leave. And then it just becomes a cycle. And then how are we supposed to educate our students when we don't have the teachers or don't have the support that we need? And it's really scary.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes like, cause I've talked to different teachers and even myself, sometimes it's just an environment change or a leadership change. You know, it's like, it's not necessarily that we hate education altogether, but like you said, it's the system that we're having to work in and function in that is can be taxing and can push us to not enjoying it, which is really sad because we usually do still like it, you know?
I mean, I said, my parents were both teachers and they're both retired now, but just having conversations with them about their how education has changed in their tenure. You know, they were there when all the No Child Left Behind stuff started happening and how all, you know, my dad loves talking about, you know, you got to get data and you got to put it in the hallway with glitter on it because, you know, for a while and still kind of to this point, it was data. What does it mean? I don't care. Just, you know, have it. And just talking about how education changes in these cyclical ways and we kind of jump ship before we have before we're able to figure out if it worked or not. You know, we got to do something because we are not on the right trajectory to improve. We're going to make things are going to get a lot worse before they get a lot better.
Yeah, for sure. So I appreciate you staying in there and helping other elementary teachers, you know, have some a bigger toolbox that they can take to the classroom and really, you know, provide students with a well-rounded program. So that's pretty amazing. So if people wanted to connect with you, where can they find you?
The best way to reach out to me, I'm on Instagram at thatmusicteacher, or you can head over to my website, thatmusicteacher.com. If we have any music teachers listening by chance, I also have a podcast called That Music Podcast, which is available pretty much everywhere that you can find podcasts. And those are kind of the best ways to kind of track me down.
Nice. What do you talk about on your podcast?
I talk all things elementary music, pedagogy, classroom management, you know, teachers, health and support. And we just kind of dive in what it really means to be an elementary music teacher and how we can help each other kind of do what we need to do and support those students in our classroom and make it a classroom where everyone can learn.
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. Is there anything else before we run off that you'd like to say or share?
I'm just going to leave it on the point I brought up earlier, which is whether or not you're a teacher, whether or not you're going to be teaching forever, wherever you're going, assume positive intent. If someone cuts you off, maybe they didn't see you, assume positive intent. And that is a big change in your life that can really just shift your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. Good advice. And we can take that into our week and see how it shifts. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
I can't thank you enough for listening to these podcast episodes and supporting the work that I'm doing here. If you can think of anybody that could benefit from the conversation I just had, please go ahead and forward that to them. If you are on Apple Podcasts, a review would be much appreciated, or a follow on Spotify is how I can continue to get the word out about the work that I'm doing here. If you would like more support and encouragement throughout your week, you can find me on Instagram at A Creative Purpose. And I would also like to drop into your email box with some more insights and encouragement throughout your weeks. And you can do that at naomigeidel.com. Until next time, go serve the world as only you can.